You are listening to the 10th episode of the GITM podcast. Yes, we're on double digits now. The 10th episode of the GITM podcast, the anime and comic book podcast, which we take things one arc further. I talk anime, I talk comic books every darn week, and it is my quest to make sense of it all. In today's episode, finally talking Neon Genesis Evangelion. I wouldn't really name this podcast Get in the Mecha for no reason. So finally, I am here giving you some Evangelion content. Today we're looking at what I call, or what is called, really, the prelude arc. And I'll go into how arcs are defined in Evangelion, and that's how I'll be dividing the episodes. So if you do enjoy this episode, or if you do get value from today's episode, consider leaving a review on your podcast app. And if you would like to contact the show at Get in the Mecha on Twitter for updates and all those other things, and for show notes, that is getinthemecha.home.blog. Without wasting any more time, here is the episode for this week, finally on double digits. This is the GITM podcast. So let me quickly talk about how I'm going to be handling Evangelion on the show. So in today's episode, I'm going to be taking a dive into what is called the prologue arc, and that is known to be the first 1 to 5 episodes of the original series. The arcs which I'm basing my episodes on, I should have made that more clear in the intro, these are fan-based. I did not make these. They seem to be fan consensus. I didn't know about these until not too long ago, but that is how I'm going to be doing it. So the 4 arcs are the prologue arc, the action arc, the descent arc, and the bitter end. For the final episodes, what I will be doing is I will do EOE or End of Evangelion separate to the original ending of the 1995 series. Then I would love to do an analysis of Death and Rebirth and the rebuilds. We got 3.0 plus 1.0 coming out soon in 2020, so that is something to look forward to. But now, let me just quickly talk a bit about EVA and why I'm doing this. So recently, EVA came onto Netflix, and that excites me quite a lot. It means we're going to possibly have quite a few more EVA fans, or just people who are now exposed to Evangelion, and also just some returning people who have had their excitement for the show sort of reinvigorated, if you will. So I think that is really cool. And although Netflix has had their dumpster fire that is Enter the Anime, and generally haven't had the greatest reputation in the anime community, I do think it's still nice that I get to watch each and every episode in full HD, alongside EOE and Death and Rebirth, which I'm grateful for. So today, we're starting that journey with the first 5 episodes of the show. I'll be looking at the mind of Shinji as he starts his road of development or cycle of change. Be looking at some of the fights in this part of the show and so much more. Before I go a bit too deep, I should say, spoilers for the prelude arc, or the first 6 episodes of Neon Genesis Evangelion, the original series. Context is key, so I can't really just go into analysis without talking about what has happened, as EVA does come with a significant amount of context right at the beginning from the first episode. So let's dive into that, which calls for a plot summary. After the catastrophic event that is known as the Second Impact, things have taken a turn. Alongside the environmental impacts, it is now 2015, 15 years after the Second Impact. Tokyo has become somewhat futuristic, with locations such as Tokyo 3 existing, where the majority of our plot will take place. A body that works closely with the UN, which goes by the name NERV, works closely to try and combat these angels which have been appearing and terrorizing areas such as Tokyo 3 with these mechas known as EVAs. But this is where it gets more and more interesting, because the person who runs NERV is the father of our main protagonist, Shinji Ikari. Gedo Ikari runs NERV, and slowly as we get through this arc, we learn the deep and dark secrets that lie behind this company as they put on this brave face to defend what is what appears to be humanity, but there is more to NERV itself. But back to the summary. Shinji is now taken under the wing of one of our other main characters, Misato, and is summoned by his father, who is barely ever present, Gedo. And surprise, 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 it is now Shinji's job to pilot the EVA, as he has some sort of compatibility with this mech. So now, a 14-year-old kid has the responsibility of defending modern Tokyo. And that, in summary, is basically the first few episodes of Evangelion. Not to forget characters such as Rei, Misato, which we will get into, but EVA generally just has so much meat to it that you have to understand before you get further and further into it, which is kind of how Dementia anime works, I guess. If you don't know, Dementia anime, not talking medically here, but Dementia anime refers to, well, I'll give you my sort of definition of Dementia anime, and by that it's kind of an anime that becomes more and more vivid, or quote-unquote deeper as you go further in, and more meaning is sort of conveyed as time passes by. Again, my definition is not definitive, but that's kind of how I see it, and I kind of see Evangelion doing the exact same thing. So the first thing I really am gushing to talk about when it comes to the prologue arc is that first appearance of the EVA. EVAs being the mechs that the children are responsible for, as they have connections with that or with those, and therefore you don't see adults piloting EVAs. Shinji and EVA 01 is one of the most important relationships in this show to explore. Yeah, that can be argued for other characters or the relationship between two characters versus human and EVA, but as this is one of the main relationships that is really pushed in this show from this part of the arc, I think it's essential that I touch on it. The prologue arc honestly gives me mixed feelings when it comes to the EVA. And when I say mixed feelings, I don't mean critically. I kind of mean mixed feelings in the way that I feel kind of eerie about the EVA and its purpose. Visually, I would say that the EVA looks menacing. It has a massive black shadow cast through it, and in the art style that was 90s anime, dark looks really, really dark. So it kind of looks like a massive black shadow cast across it, and the only thing you can see on one of these sides, I believe, which is the left side, if we're in Shinji's eyes looking up at the EVA, is just one yellow eye, and then on the other side you can see it fully. But even just through size and visuals and cinematography, I think the EVA is something to be reckoned with. The EVA doesn't seem friendly, and Shinji is simply just this small boy who has to undertake this large responsibility that is defend Tokyo 3, who are now trying to destroy NERV HQ through drilling and whatever means possible. So I think creating that contrast between small and timid boy versus large, massive mecha is a really good contrast to make. Another thing that I picked up on that I think is quite important, and it's actually quite subtle, I think it actually underlies or undercuts a lot of the EVA series, it's that ambient music. Well, sort of ambient music you get during that phase. It's that really dark hum. I'm not going to hum on the show. I don't want to destroy your ears with my humming. But just that sound alone sounds so mellow and so dark all at the same time. Through visuals and music, that relationship seems kind of like a risk. And the thing is, let's compare it to the stakes. The stakes here are Tokyo and human life and potentially the entire world, because the angels are no simple small fries here. But then we compare that to what else is on the line, and these are more personal stakes. So if we take the technological risk of piloting the Eva, which we see right off the bat in this arc being the prologue arc, Shinji's sanity, his relationship with his father, those things kind of are on the scales here. So you have to consider that the relationship between Eva and human, or Eva and Shinji, so Eva 01, if I'm more specific, and Shinji Ikari, has high risk, and that risk is teased through the music, the visuals, and that is what stuck with me. It's just those things that they may appear as subtle, or I may simply be reading too into these, but that is what makes this show so special, and that's what makes this arc so special. I think it's just that relationship between the two that's explored. And now, while we're on the theme of exploring that very relationship, let's talk fights. Let's talk Shinji's many or first few fights and encounters with the Evas. And with that, we are therefore required to sort of jump into the mind of Shinji Ikari. The first thing I usually tell someone if I'm talking about Evangelion at all to them, although I'll be honest, I don't speak to many people when it comes to Eva or in person talk about anime to anyone that much, but if I do, and when I do, I would start off by saying that Shinji is a child, and that is very simple, it's true. He's 14 years old. You could kind of consider that a child, but at least he's a teenager, and I definitely wouldn't consider him an adult. And therefore, his mental age kind of is transferred or taken into consideration when it comes to combat and how he takes care of issues. I was talking a bit about dementia anime earlier, and I think the theme of dementia anime, of just things getting worse and intensive throughout as time goes on. Although I would say that when it comes to time, the time frame is not specified, as in this scene we see Shinji just snap completely from somewhat okay to complete whack out of his mind as he takes all these risks in the second fight. But what I was saying is that Shinji and the dementia element are really linked together. I don't think you can talk about Eva without talking about Shinji and how he contributes to the dementia genre that is Neon Genesis Evangelion. But back on the rails, I went a bit on a tangent there. It's the very age of Shinji and his mental age and who he is that defines how he performs in fights. As a few considerations, as I said, he's a child. He's just been introduced to the whole system when it comes to nerve and combating angels and all of those things. So similarly to when you start a video game initially, if you start League, you're not going to be very good at the beginning. And that's not me saying that Shinji is going to be a natural or eventually grow into something greater. But he is at that very beginning stage when he's doing the tutorial and all of that. But instead, he's thrown right into the deep end and has to deal with the very struggles that is fighting the angels. And the best thing about this all is that we see that. We see that right in our faces in the second fight. In the encounter that is Shinji and Eva 01 versus Shamshel, the fourth angel, the very idea of dementia, I think, is displayed there. And I'll explain a bit more. So in the fight, it's Shamshel versus Shinji, as I said, and time is running out. So There's about 5 minutes of charge, I believe, on Evo 1, and Shamshell seems to be dominating this battle. And with the added pressure of two of his classmates being on the sort of battlefield, if you will, he decides to prioritize the mission objective, and that is kill Shamshell. That leads us quite nicely into the Hedgehog Dilemma. And for that, we have to kind of go back an episode or two. So those two classmates, I always forget their names, I'm sorry, but I'm on a roll here. So those two very classmates, I'll correct myself later, evidently didn't like Shinji earlier into the series. That does change slightly, but they did not like him. But it's that relationship between the two people, or the three people if you will, the two parties, that brings them closer. And as they are therefore closer to death, Shinji decides to prioritize the objective despite the pain of becoming closer to them, and that is to defeat Shamshell. I think it's also kind of contradictory that someone that didn't really want to pilot an Eva and was scared of the responsibility is then pushed even further to prioritize the objective if it is for the lives of other people or the life of himself. That isn't me really saying Shinji is selfish, although there is tons and buckets of evidence to say that he is within the show. I do kind of go on the line and defend Shinji and say he isn't selfish, and by that I argue the Hedgehog Dilemma. In this case, I think the Hedgehog Dilemma, the dementia element, and all the contradictions just build something that is quite interesting to watch. And Shinji's behavior, what I'm trying to say, let me just summarize this nice and clearly in a sentence or two. Shinji's behavior is influenced by those around him. I think that makes sense for all the tangenting that I was doing earlier on. Shinji's behavior is influenced by those external factors. So he is influenced by the risk that is piloting the Eva, the death of classmates and the people that are closest to him, the stakes when it comes to the Eva itself, his father and everything. All those factors feed into his behavior, and therefore that is why we get those sort of erratic jumps between Shinji being relatively calm and level-headed to just straight whack out of his mind, indoctrinated to win and defeat angels and only do that. He kind of switches between vessel mode and human mode. You even see that kind of towards the end of the arc when he acts as if nothing happened and he just did what he had to do. But meanwhile, he doesn't realize that he had to put all those things on the line to do so. And from his own eyes, that is kind of all distorted. So despite my poor sort of explanation, what I'm trying to say is that Shinji definitely is influenced by everything around him, and those things influence such behaviors which we saw in the first fight. I do want to speak more Eva, and I will soon, but let's take a bit of a break from Evangelion directly, because there's one thing that I like probably just as much as Evangelion, and that is voice acting. So this is the Link the VA segment, Evangelion Edition. If you are new here, I know there are a lot of new listeners coming in as we are quite new still. What I like to do is I like to go through Mal, find the page for the anime which I'm looking for, and find one of the roles. After that, I like to look through the page of the various roles that that voice actor has that was in one of the anime that we are speaking about. So in this case, for example, we are talking Evangelion, so I might choose Shinji and the voice actor for Shinji, and therefore I go through their roles and see who they voice act and just have a bit of fun with it. In today's episode, I'm actually going to be going through the voice actor for Misato. The voice actor for Misato is Kotono Mitsuishi. Ms. Mitsuishi has voice acted loads and loads of characters, and that's what we're going to be going through today. In all honesty, as I do this blind, so I'll go on Mal about a few minutes before the show, or I'll just do it right in the middle of the show like I did today. Some of the characters are quite standard, but there was one that triggered me and one that I found really funny, and those are the two that I'll go through first. Wait, no. In fact, there's another one as well which most people know, and that is a Sailor Moon role. I haven't actually watched Sailor Moon, and maybe I'll watch it one day. It's not my priority. I'm sorry, Sailor Moon classic fans. I'm probably betraying your trust right now, but I don't know about Sailor Moon. Not because I think it's bad. I know it has an awfully high reputation. But the Sailor Moon role wasn't what really caught my eye. If you did want to know, the voice role, or the role that is played, is Usagi from Sailor Moon. Again, I don't really know context behind that because I don't know much about Sailor Moon. But if that is exciting to you, then well done. But now to the roles that really, really fascinated me. The first role, I'll talk about the one that didn't trigger me so much. The first role is actually the teacher from Danji Kokoshin no Nijijo. And that kind of sounds obscure, it's just the name teacher. I'll do a bit of an explanation. So if you haven't watched Danji Kokoshin no Nijijo, it is basically a spin-off on what is the typical slice of life high school girls story or comedy anime, if you will, similarly to Nishijo or Saikikuzo or something like that, kind of on the same lines, slice of life, but more featuring boys in high school. In one of the episodes, honestly, I can't remember from the top of my head which one it is, but in one of the episodes, there is a sketch of which there are a bunch of boys in the class, and her, being the teacher, goes through a bunch of their sort of job prospects or their sheets that say what they want to do in the future. And then they have loads of funny names, and she gets so triggered, it's really funny to watch. So one of them says ghost, one of them says a high school student. They say a bunch of different things. And then I think there's one time where one of them says something serious. I think one of them says lawyer. And then she still gets triggered. And that's kind of part of the joke. But what I'm trying to say is that I did not see that coming at all. Although Misato is quite comedic, now I guess when I see it more, it makes more sense that they are kind of similar. But Misato, yes, she gets triggered, but I don't think she gets that triggered. But that was triggered. And that was a really funny one that I just wanted to share with you guys. I would recommend watching Danji Kokoshin no Nijijo. Really fun show if you are into slice of life, or maybe you're just looking for something different and you want some comedy. Second voice role. The second role is the one that triggers me the most, mostly because of the context. And the role that Miss Mitsuishi plays, I do love the voice acting behind this role, but it triggers me so hard. This is Nagisa's mom from Ansatsu Kiyoshitsu, or Assassination Classroom. I have to quickly explain some context, so spoilers for Ansatsu Kiyoshitsu, second season I do believe, but spoilers for Ansatsu Kiyoshitsu in general. So Ansatsu Kiyoshitsu is basically a school anime of which there's a class and they're kind of bad. I'm explaining this really quickly. They're kind of bad. They're misfits, sort of. That's how they like to go, or that's how they like to label themselves. But they're separated from the rest of the school because the school is dumb, and therefore they decided to do some project thing where they introduce this teacher called Koro-sensei, who they effectively have to kill, but Koro-sensei isn't human. I spoke a bit about Koro-sensei in one of the previous episodes when I spoke about Yukio from Aeonexus. I think that was in episode 6, I do believe. But yeah, so all of those things happen. But what is most important is that Nagisa looks kind of like a girl, and Nagisa's mom wanted a girl, and he's been held to that for basically his entire life by his really annoying, really, really, really annoying mom. And then there's almost one episode, or like a whole half of an episode, dedicated to Nagisa's mom's rage when it comes to him being in that part of the school and how he's never met expectations, while she wishes he was a girl, and she goes to the extent where she basically goes to burn down the school. And that was just crazy, and I kind of felt angry for Nagisa, I felt angry for Koro-sensei, I felt sorry for everybody. I even felt bad watching it, I almost felt embarrassed watching it, and I think the shouting that comes out of that role, the exaggeration and all of that, takes a lot of talent, and I know I say this in almost every Link the VA segment, but that was very good. That was a great performance for Miss Mitsuishi, so kudos to her. Kudos to all the voice actors of which we talk about here in the Link the VA segment. Although the role did trigger me, it was a great one, and I have to give credit to that. But that is going to do it for this week's Link the VA segment. Hopefully in these Evangelion episodes we'll be able to get through as many characters as possible. I like to zoom in to one character rather than do a bunch because it gets a bit messy. And hopefully you guys are enjoying this segment. But on that note, back to Neon Genesis Evangelion. So, back to the show. I was speaking before about the relationship between Dementia Anime and Shinji and how that all makes a full circle, especially seen in the fight with Shamshell. But let's talk a bit about the first fight. Let's talk about Sariel. Sariel is the third angel. The third angel that is Sachiel. This part is slightly less about Shinji and more about foreboding in general. I think those sort of three episodes, so I think it goes from around episode 2 to 3/4. I think that's really the region for Sachiel, particularly the end of episode 1. But with the phase done with Sachiel, the important thing to note is just how menacing the Eva appears and how things don't appear to be what they are teased as, or what they look like on first hand. Despite the Eva looking menacing in the very first episode where I spoke about all of that earlier today, the Eva still seems like somewhat of a defender. I think the Eva, I do think the Eva looks very menacing, but one thing is that it still looks like something that can defend. It looks something like a transformer, if you will. It looks like a symbol of hope. I've realized I've been saying symbol of hope so many times, but that is what it looks like. It still looks like something that is capable of defending Tokyo 3, which it is. But when we go deeper into this, it's the whole afterthought of the Eva, and that is what one of the episodes does when we see the true form of the Eva, when it effectively goes berserk, and similarly to what I said, like Shinji goes almost whack and loses its mind. That is kind of the more scary part, rather than knowing that the Eva is simply just a defender or just a menacing piece of technology, but knowing that it can go wild and knowing that it has a mind of its own to the extent where it destroys Sachiel. And the thing about Sachiel is that this angel is perceived as very strong. This angel isn't perceived as a small fry. I don't think any angel is perceived as a small fry. But when you see Sachiel and how Shinji effectively loses to him on the first try, and then the mech goes berserk, as we know, and destroys Sachiel outright, that is what is the scary part, and that is where the dementia element kicks in, and not everything appears to be what it really is. Nerve doesn't appear to be what it really is. The Evas obviously have some truth behind them. Shinji obviously has some layers behind him, and you can apply that to every single character, whether that's Misato, whether that is Rei, whether that is anybody in this series, and that is one of the themes that I think comes out in the prologue arc. It's the fact that before you get truly into the core or invested into this series where you meet the third child and all the other stuff, it's just the fact that things aren't what they should be. And as we explore this anime further and further throughout the 25 episodes in EOE, we will uncover those layers bit by bit. And just think of it almost as bait. it just puts it right in front of you. And now you have to kind of do the waiting. And I've seen Evangelion, and I do know that that isn't the case where you kind of just find out the truth on the final episode. It doesn't work like that. It's slowly teased within. But I do think that overall, that is a very smart move. It's give them the very extreme. That is, this is what the Evas look like when they go crazy. And then just take that away and remove it from their sight. And then slowly bring that in and condition the audience to learn about that slowly throughout the series. So in summary, what I'm trying to say is that the prologue arc is good really for foreshadowing and defining the genre that is dementia anime or dementia thriller psychological anime. I do think it is slightly hard to define Evangelion as a genre, but if I was to, that's kind of what I'd put it in. It does those two things really well. It gives you context, it gives you some foreshadowing, and it gives you the means to carry on this series almost. I think of the prologue arc a bit like the sales pitch. It kind of draws you in, and then you buy the product, which is the remaining episodes. And assuming that the sales pitch is successful, it doesn't go wrong. And that might just be my bias showing for Evangelion, but I am just really proud of how that works. And to be honest, that is probably one of the main reasons why I got into Evangelion in the first place. It was these first episodes that really caused me to get really invested, because it was those subtle teases of, say, what is within the Evas, or what Gero's plans are, or how is Shinji going to progress, how is Rei going to progress, and all of those things kind of merge together and make a really good piece that I really enjoy watching, or in the case of the past, wanted to watch. So where does the prologue arc leave us by the end? For sure, we're definitely in a sticky situation. As I said earlier in today's episode, we're bound by the decisions or the external influences that are Tokyo 3, Misato, Rei, Gero, Nerve, humanity, and everything else. Those external influences are what we end the prologue arc with, which sets us nicely into more uses and applications of the Hedgehog Dilemma. Also, we kind of gain an understanding into what we are working with when it comes to stakes, and we know that Shinji psychologically can't handle everything as well as someone else could, as he is, yes, a child piloting a massive mecha that is responsible for an entire city. And we also learn that Shinji is kind of in flux between the state of wanting to leave this life as it is too much pressure, as again he is a child defending Tokyo 3, and then the other side, that is the fact that he has those people and external influences holding him down. So it's that mix between the two that makes this a really complex character and story. So we've kind of reached our first stage in the Shinji spectrometer thing, if you will, where Shinji is kind of confused. He's in a mixed state between following what other people tell him to do as he receives praise from it, and is considering leaving this life because it simply is too much pressure. I do think the action arc does change that quite a bit, but that is for another episode. So with that nice segue, I have a new segment. Okay, that was an awful segue, actually. That wasn't even a segue at all. But to wrap up today's episode before I conclude and just go on some closing thoughts when it comes to Eva and the prologue arc, I have a new segment now, and that is called In the Moment. Each week, I will kind of just spend about a minute or two just talking about what I've been watching and what is on my radar at the moment. So quickly, here is the In the Moment segment for this week. In terms of what I'm doing at the moment when it comes to anime and stuff, I've taken quite a lot of time to binge or watch Monogatari series second season. I've kind of been making a lot of progress on that. I finally made it to the Maui Jiangshi arc, if I'm not mistaken. Really, really, really good arc. I initially put Suruga Monkey as probably my favorite arc of the show so far, but after watching Maui Jingshai, or Jiangshi, sorry, I have fell in love with that arc. I don't want to go too into details because I am planning to do some Bakemonogatari or Monogatari series episodes on some arcs, so I'm not going to spoil what goes on in the Maui Jiangshi arc, but honestly what I can say is that I am really impressed with how Monogatari is going from where I am. Similar to what I was talking about when it came to Eva in today's episode, it's that foreshadowing of the stuff to do with Spring Break as I am watching it in airing order or shaft order, if you will. I'm not watching Bakemonogatari and then just go straight into Kizumonogatari. I'm kind of against that at the moment. But I am really happy with how it's rolling in certain details and keeping some back for Kizumonogatari and other parts of the show. Second thing that I will talk about quickly before I just do some closing statements on today's episode is I just finished a show called Seikano, or How to Raise a Boring Girlfriend and How to Raise a Boring Girlfriend Flat. That's the second season of the show. In all honesty, I probably will do a review of this someday, but in all honesty, I was looking for harem drama just to waste time. I like to watch anime. I've recently been watching anime while editing, actually. I don't know how I do it, but I happen to know how to read the subs while cutting some of this audio. I'll probably do it when editing this very episode. But when watching this show, it completely changed how I thought of harem. And that is slightly hyperbolic, but I honestly did not know that a show could make me this emotional. And the most emotional I felt about a show was Sangatsu no Leon, which I spoke about a tiny, tiny bit in episode 1, but I finished that quite a long time ago now. But now for Seikano, Seikano kind of proves that harem isn't simply about just romance and romantic competition, but it can actually go far deeper than that, and it kind of proves to me that harem is more than simply a genre. I kind of had this thought today, actually, when I was just wandering around in the house, and that was that, is harem really a genre, or is it more of just a framework? Because when putting this into perspective, because I think about this anime quite a lot now, is harem simply just a format or a template, and you input other things into it? And I know that's kind of a cryptic explanation, but I don't want to spend too much time on that because I want to do some closing thoughts. But let's end this segment. If you do, let me sell out here. If you do want to message the show, that is getinthemecha@gmail.com. That is getinthemecha@gmail.com. You can send in your questions and opinions, and I will try to read those in the show. Trying to collect a bank of those at the moment, as I know we are quite new, but soon I will give you those. Also, check me out on Twitter, that is @getinthemecha. That is @getinthemecha, just as this podcast is named. You can tweet me, you can talk to me, I'm open, I'm probably as shy as you are. If you want to talk anime with me, I am open there. You can also send in a question to the show through that way as well, if you consider or prefer doing that. And finally, my blog, that is getinthemecha.home.blog, getinthemecha.home.blog. I have all the episodes up on there, so if you want to listen from the site, you can do so. Also have all the show notes on there as well, with sources for the episode, the music, and everything is there with a summary of what I said for the episode. And I have it in a nice, lovely PDF if you wish to download that. So that is getinthemecha.home.blog. But forget my blog right now. Let's end the show. So that has been it for the In The Moment segment. Back to the show. What can we take from the prologue arc in Neon Genesis Evangelion? The first thing I would say is that we can definitely get a sense of genre. And although Eva's genre has always been kind of in flux, it's hard to really shove it in the mecha category as it is so much more than a mecha, although it is one. We kind of learn that not everything is as it seems, as I said earlier. This anime does prove that it can be multi-layered, and you simply have to, as an audience member, just watch some more to learn that, and that is done through foreshadowing. Second thing, and that is progress, and that is kind of like what I was saying to do with the whole idea of dementia anime, but things will change as they go along, and that includes Shinji's personality, the truth of the Evas, and everybody. Chronologically, things will change and things will develop and evolve. Evolution is a very key factor when it comes to Evangelion, and the prologue arc kind of just kicks that off. Shinji on his spectrum, he's kind of ticked off the first part now, and he is moving on to the next during the action arc. And finally, this one is kind of weird, but Neon Genesis Evangelion is not simple. There will be loads of contradictions and varying viewpoints from various characters, various factors that will kind of put our characters into sticky situations. If you take Shinji, if you take Misato, and all of those characters, the characters are pushed to their limits in this anime, and the prelude arc definitely shows that. I'm honestly quite the fan of the prologue arc. After rewatching it on Netflix, I'm kind of starting to find why I really fell in love with Evangelion again. And the next time when I speak about Evangelion, which will be on the action arc, I am very excited to see these characters and events and philosophies and everything just go further and evolve. Thank you for listening to today's episode of the GITM podcast. Hopefully you enjoyed it. I had a great time talking about the prologue arc today as a part of Neon Genesis Evangelion. Have a lovely week. Hopefully you are enjoying this content. If you do, consider leaving a review on your podcast app. If you did get value from it, consider sharing this with a friend or someone that likes Evangelion or anything like that. It helps me so much get the show out there. But that is going to be all for today. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your time. Have a lovely week. Hopefully I will see you next week. Goodbye. The music in today's production goes as follows. Go Lucky by Chasers Gaming. Difference by Chasers Gaming. Mandatory Overtime by Joth. And The Inspector Arrives by Eric Medeas, under soundimage.org.